To this week's episode of the Wealth Lab podcast with Phil and Scott. And how are you, Scott?
G'day, Phil. I'm well. Hello, dear very listener.
Good. G'day.
Big one today. Let's get going.
Yeah. Look, today we're going to be talking about charitable giving, which is something that's often close to a lot of people's hearts and something that, you know, is important to people, but we maybe don't fully understand or know the consequences of. So we give some good practical tips and things to consider when thinking about giving to charity. Scott, do you want to kick off?
I do. So, look, I was in the process of writing the quarterly email out to our clients today, and I thought this would actually be a good opportunity for us to do a podcast, because when I was doing my research, it was saying that, let's have a look here, it was saying that something like 80% of us say that we are donating to charity, but almost none of us actually do. So there's a huge difference between actually what we say we're doing and the reality of what we actually do. So I thought that was an interesting one.
Find a couple sort of tickets in the meat tray at the pub count?
Probably yes.
Yeah. I'm very charitable. Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of where you're at with that one as well. So I don't know where you sit. Over the years, my view on charitable giving has probably changed a little bit. And I think initially when I started and I was coming out post training as an advisor, you do your buckets and sort of you're trying to put 10% of your money into charity on a monthly basis. Yeah. And then as I sort of went through and now been doing this for 12 and a half years, and I've seen, let's say, 150 people a year for 12 and a half years. So, you know, almost 2,000 families that I've advised. My position is probably closer to, you know, when you're in the airplane and the mask drop down and they say that you need to fit the mask first. This is a great analogy. I can't believe I just thought of
really
that.
Really good. You've done well. Yeah.
That wasn't prepared.
Yeah, I like it.
But I really think you do need to fit your mask first. So I think the concept of charity giving is fantastic, but I really think you need the fundamentals down first before you can really start doing the charity thing. So for example, if you've got credit card debt, if you've got buy now, pay later debt, if you've got a 14-year-old and a 17-year-old at high school and you're sort of struggling to manage the costs that are coming with that, I think actually your charitable giving, just purely from a financial planning perspective, should be zero or close to zero, just to get through those years. I think instead of a stabilized, 10% every year for your entire life, it can be 0% for a number of years, and then you really ramp it up later in life once the kids have moved out of home and the expenses change. So you can still donate an amount, but maybe push it to a later in life or I think more of a lump sum type charitable giving is, in my opinion, what I've seen work more effectively.
Yeah. Look, I think that's an interesting concept, and it's probably not a bad way to think of it. I did really like that analogy. I think it's pretty apt, the old mask dropping down. Even thinking about it, like from a retirement planning perspective, it's often a question that I'll ask clients when we're going through what their goals are and that sort of thing, with the end result of trying to figure out how much money do they need to retire. And my job would be easy if everyone could give me the date they were going to die, but no one knows. So, we don't know how much, we can take a good stab, but we don't know exactly how much money you're going to need to live and how long it's going to need to last you. So I would say that if charitable giving is something that's really important to you and you want that to continue into retirement, it's a really important discussion to have with your financial planner early, because it's something we need to budget for and factor and make sure that you don't run out of the gates hot and travel all overseas and give a bunch of money away and then all of a sudden find out that, geez, I've lived past 80 and now I'm in strife. So that's number one consideration. Another consideration a lot of people probably miss coming into retirement is our good friends at Centrelink. They don't love you giving money away, funnily enough. No, they want you to spend it on yourself. Like it. So you've got to be, you've got to be careful if you're on the age pension or coming into age pension that you're not going to, go and think you're doing the right thing and give some money to a charity, but then run afoul of the gifting rules, which is, you can only give away $10,000 a year to a maximum of $30,000 over a 5-year period. So, for some people, that's probably a hell of a lot of money, but other people, it might not be that, it might be something they're quite keen to do.
Yeah.
So.
And if that went over your head, book a meeting with Phil, because he loves to talk about it in more detail.
Yeah.
But specifically, just be real careful about gifting money to kids in your later years. It's very, very, it's very fraught with danger. I've just finished listening to a book called Die with Zero, and I was told of the idea of listening to podcasts at 1.5 speed, to try and compress the podcast into your face. Now, I'm not sure if it's really like The Matrix where you just stand still and you just all of a sudden you know jiu-jitsu, which is what happens in that movie. But I found I can listen to podcasts at 1.2 speed, and it's actually great. I can listen to it, and I actually motored my way through the Die with Zero book. And the concept of this book is that you should the best time to give money to your kids is when they're in their 20s, late 20s and early 30s. That's the time when the gifts that you give them are the most useful. They need them the least when they are in their 60s, which is most likely when money is given to them.
Mm, that's very true.
So I know there's a bit of sort of controversy around sort of, well, like how long am I going to live? I don't know. So, but the key element of that is that when you're, say, starting out, trying to buy a house, trying to start a family, it's just getting on the property ladder, getting some equity in a property, maybe preparing some money for the primary school and then moving to the secondary school. At that moment, that's the most important that's where you can get the highest leverage for giving money to family. And that's it. That's the summary of the book.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point. And yeah, it's probably very accurate. I mean, if I reflect on my own life, yeah, absolutely. Young kids, mortgage, all that sort of stuff.
Totally.
Yeah.
It'd be really nice to have that paid off, wouldn't it?
Look, another interesting point too that's worth calling about charity, and there'll be salespeople all over the country that'll hate me saying this, but be mindful of who you're giving it to and the method that you're giving it to people. If you sign up to old mate at the shopping center that's told you that you need to support Surf Life. Now, I'm all for supporting the Surf Life Saving Club. I'm an old clubby from way back, and it's, of course, close to my heart. But old mate selling memberships to raffles out the front of the shopping center, most of that money that you're giving is going to a marketing company. Not much of it's making its way back to the charity. You know, somewhere I think it's as little as 2 to 5% from what I've seen. So find the charity that's near and dear to you. If you're going to dedicate some of your hard-earned money towards that, give it directly to the organization. Yeah, that's
an It's an interesting setup. So look, imagine you're in a position. Imagine you're a charity, and pick anything. Right? Let's go. The life-saving parrot charity. Okay. Far North Queensland, whatever. And you're a charity, and you need funds. And these charity mugging, they call them the chuggers, the charity muggers. These marketing organizations go, look, we've got a fleet of muggers here, and they're just going to go after all these people, and they're going to give you this revenue stream. You're in a position in which you don't have you need revenue. Mm. So you're willing to do a deal with these types of marketing organizations, knowing that they're going to take a pretty big cut of that, that donation that they're raising for you, because you say, well, look at the ends. What do they say? The ends justifies the means. So look, these insert thing that we care about. Let's say it's the baby parrots or whatever. They need to be saved. We need to do a deal with this organization to try and save them.
Yeah.
So it's actually an interesting mix of incentives here, because the incentives are, you are aligning yourself. So you want to have people, you want to connect with people who want to help your charity. But it's just the unfortunate messiness of a middleman, which I think causes the friction. So I would say when you are being approached by someone in the supermarket, the shopping center, wherever it is, and if you really do like the cause, just go direct, because then they're going to get all that money.
Mm.
So that's the way to do it. It's the same thing with dealing with like the booking.com. If you've had a really great experience on a accommodation somewhere, if you just go onto their website directly, they're going to be able to keep 15% or 20% of your revenue and give you that same experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
There's also, I wasn't sure if I was going to talk about this, but the good news is we only get 7 to 12 views a podcast.
We're not going to upset too many people, is that what you're saying? Yeah.
I have come across they were basically, they took the same, and I think I might have mentioned this on an earlier podcast, so I can probably do it again. They were utilizing a similar strategy in which small cap fund managers were trying to raise capital. And basically they were offering commissions of between 4% and 10% capital raisers who these people, and they were going to people who'd usually try and, you've got a small cap mining company, you've got a pharmaceutical business you're trying to list on the stock market, right? These people have networks and connections. They're used to that sort of commission up front to raise capital. And it was just random like charity group that was offering the same types of commissions to, and it was like a managed fund model, which I thought was interesting.
Huh, that is interesting, yeah.
So the mechanics were the same as you know, the hard Collins Street, George Street,
yeah,
kind of, you know, hard finance, but it was wrapped up in this like really pretty, a lot of pastels, a lot of pastel colors, you know, sort of, I had like, you know, the website was really gorgeous, but at the back end, it was, just going after those capital raises, trying to get, you know, a few million dollars in the door, not a few hundred thousand or a few, they were going after millions to tens of millions, which I thought was kind of interesting. So
yeah,
the summary from that is the mechanics of capital raising are interesting, and people do use it to try and part with your charity dollars as well.
Yep. Yeah. And look, I feel like we've spent a bit of time talking about reasons not to, what to give or things to be careful of. I want to be really clear. I'm absolutely not sitting here, I'm sure Scott's not either, and saying don't give money to charity. What we're saying is be mindful of the method that you choose to make sure that the maximum of your dollar actually does go to that charity. And also, don't forget, you give straight to the charity, it's tax deductible. You give via a marketing agency, it's some sort of competition. So you're also doing yourself out of a tax deduction, which is actually another interesting one that I might bring up. Your old Woolies or wherever else that's got you want to round up to 5 cents or 10 cents or whatever at the checkout. Have you seen those, Scott?
Oh, you hate that. You've done this before.
Yes, I have.
Tell me about it, Phil.
I mean, sure, it's great that more money is ending up with charity, but all we're really doing there is handing away our own personal tax deduction that we could have gotten by giving that company that money ourselves and letting Woolies get the tax deduction instead.
So just to be clear, if you roll, you know, give, you know, $5 at the till, collectively Woolies is able to then say put $100,000 to insert X charity, and they get $100,000 tax deduction for doing that. Now, yes, they give you the mechanics because they process the payment. They are custodians of the fund and they give you that service. So you argue there might be a bit of a service there.
Sure.
But I mean, should you put that $5 yourself, you'd actually be able to claim a tax deduction.
Yeah. So summary from me is, by all means, give to charity. Be smart about how you do it. And also, if it's something that's really important to you, particularly if it's going to be larger donations and later in life, speak to your financial planner, speak to myself, speak to Scott. There are some tips and traps that you need to be aware of. You need to make sure that you've got enough money to live. You need to make sure you're not going to run afoul of Centrelink.
Love it. And moving on from that one, it's not always about money. There is more ways that you can donate. You can donate your time. You can donate your skills. So if something is important to you and it's something that you want to have in part of your world, volunteer at the local pirate shelter, volunteer at the local whatever it is. If you've got a skill set that's of value, if you're a graphic designer, if you're a project manager in the past, and this is something that you really feel passionate about, it's a great opportunity for you to give back something more than just money, but you can help and get involved in that community through managing things, designing things, helping them. I think that's a big opportunity that's often missed, which is, being a bit more creative about, inspiring yourself. If you find yourself inspired by a charity, then you can do more, and I think that would really help and appreciate that.
Hmm. Yeah, great point.
In terms of actually integrating, say, a charity giving process, Phil, what do you find does work? Because I can tell you what I do personally.
Yeah, what I think works is it's the same as anything in life that's like savings or anything like that. Small amounts regularly, consistency in everything in life pays off. So small amounts regularly, I think, is a great thing. You're not going to miss $5 a week, but a charity is sure as hell going to feel that over a number of years. Do it directly to something that's close to your heart. Avoid middlemen where you can. That's me. What do you do personally, Scott?
So I don't remember how I got in touch with it, but I am a big believer in consistency. And the most difficult thing that charities have, having done a bit of work with them, is if you're the flavor of the month, you get a lot of money put into your account for the moment, and then someone else is a flavor of the month next month. So for example, I think it was it Malcolm Turnbull who put $500 million into a Barrier Reef Fund. It was like his final thing of the day before he got kicked out of the office. I think it was Malcolm Turnbull, and I think he just had some funds. He was like, "That's it." This one charity just received this huge lump of money, and then so they were drips and drabs in all this money. The the thing that the charities need the most is they need consistent revenue. So they need it done on a regular basis. And it's just about picking one thing that you're on and just supporting that consistently, either through your money or through your time or through your efforts, and not sort of playing favorites here. And, you know, we're doing this, this course here and this course here. It's, I think the impact is, what's the word? Let's say shallow and wide or narrow and deep. I think narrow and deep is much more effective and creates better outcomes. So I use the online tool called Kiva, K-I-V-A. And it provides microfinance to people in like third world countries who need access to credit. And I know it's a very financial planner thing to say, but but credit, you know, cash is what makes the world move. Yeah, and it's exactly those gears. Right. So providing short-term interest-free loans to small businesses in third world countries to help them create a business and to help them move things forward is something that's really close to my heart, and I really like to reward that entrepreneurial spirit. And I see that money that I loan those people as effectively as a donation. If they give it back to me, great. I'm going to then use that money to then loan out again. Or if they don't, it was a donation. So I see it as a true gift.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it because it's like I get access to the velocity of money, and I'm actually directly utilizing the velocity of money, meaning, and that is how fast $1 moves around an economy. So in somewhere like Australia, money moves pretty quick. We've got low friction. If you're in the third world, banking system doesn't work as well, so the velocity of money is lower. So if I lend $1, that person will then pay it back, and then I'll lend it to another, and then I'll pay it back. So in theory, I've created $2 of velocity through my $1. So that's how I work. I've been supporting that for about 10 years. So that's my little story. That's my little thoughts on it. What about you? What's like?
Yeah, well, look, I'll be the first to admit that I've been quite a bit slacker since having kids. Time is at a premium. But long history of sitting on the beach between the flags and making sure people don't drown. It's quite a lot of years there, and quite a lot of time cutting up old clothes into rags at the out the back of Salvos on the band tour. So really? I spent a lot of time doing stuff as opposed to giving money, although I am a regular donator to the Surf Lifesavers as well. It's criminally underfunded. A lot of time spent doing bits and pieces like that, which was cool. It was also really cool when I first started at the Salvos. I was probably only 15 or 16 when I started volunteering there. And up until that time, I used to spend school holidays working in my dad's panel shop with him. And he always had these massive bags of rags that used to come in, and I never knew where they were coming from. And then I found out. Eventually, I became the man that cut the rags up.
Cool. So you got the whole circle.
You got the whole circle, yeah. So cool. All the old crap clothes they can't sell were getting cut up into rags and sold to panel beaters. So there you go.
That's a good use of, like, yeah. So it just kept it moving around.
That's right. Good for the charity, but also good for the dump.
All right, guys. So, look, I'm just going to sort of wrap this up. If you are thinking about donating to charity, that's a great thing. First of all, don't feel guilty if you're not, because you need to get your financial house sorted first before you should really start giving money away, realistically. And if you're in that position in which you want to do something, well, you've got your opportunity to give your time, to give your expertise, work with yourself, work with a financial planner, get your cash flow sorted. And then once you're ready from there, then we can start doing a consistent donation plan or a lump sum donation plan, depending on how it suits you. Phil, is there anything you want to wrap up from there?
Yeah, just, I bang on about this in some context just about every week, but discuss your retirement plans with your significant other. I always raise that one, and that should form a significant part of that discussion. If either one of you has a passion that you want to make sure you're supporting through retirement, make sure you're on the same page with that.
Great. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.
Beautiful. Cheers.